as we've already heard, we are starting or continuing our series, but are looking at the first of the names of Jesus that is given in this portion of the Old Testament. We're particularly looking at Isaiah. And we're looking at words that were written hundreds of years before Jesus walked this earth. And as we've already heard this morning, we're looking at the first of those names, which is wisdom, and starting to think about what does that mean for our lives. Now, we've already heard a little bit this morning about Solomon being the third king of Israel, and he was famed both for his wisdom and for his wealth, and considered to be one of the wisest people who ever lived. And he wrote at least two of those books that we looked at earlier on wisdom. And the first of those that Angela mentioned was the book of Proverbs. And in Proverbs, he has lots to say about wisdom. But he gives advice on how to approach wisdom. And he says this: the beginning of wisdom is this. Get wisdom. Though it cost all you have, and Solomon had a lot, though it cost you all you have, get understanding. Which is great, but it doesn't really tell us what wisdom is and how we go about getting it. So I want you just to take a moment to think for yourself about somebody in your life that has characterised wisdom, that has shown wisdom to you. Start to think about that earlier, but just take a moment to picture in your mind, who is that person in your life that has been wise towards you? And what was it about them that impacted you? Maybe we'll share a little bit about that after coffee. But for me, the person that comes to mind is somebody called John. When I was 19, after my first year at university, I went on a leadership training camp in the Lake District. And we spent a couple of weeks working during the daytime in the National Trust. And in the evenings, we were digging into the Bible, learning how to unpack it, how to lead small groups, how to share our faith. And John was my small group leader for those couple of weeks. And I was really struck by his wisdom in a really gentle way, how he shared his long life. We talked about the experience and the wisdom that comes with age. And he went on to pray for that small group of guys for years to come, and connecting with us every so often to ask how he could pray. And I have no doubt that he was part of what got me through as a Christian through university. And I saw something of God's character in those really simple acts of just serving us and praying. So we're going to be looking at a number of names that come through Jesus through Isaiah. And Lou helped us last week to start thinking about that, because Isaiah was a prophet being someone that hears from God and then is used as God's mouthpiece to speak to the people. And as we look at how God spoke through Isaiah, we see him pointing to Jesus, who is going to come in the future, and revealing something of him in advance. So we're going to start by looking at Isaiah, then we're going to look at how that played out in Jesus' life, and then we're going to look at what that means for us today. A bit of background to Isaiah when he spoke these words. The year is about 720 BC. I've done that one. The year is about 720 BC. God's people had been divided into two nations. The northern kingdom of Israel had been destroyed by the mighty Assyrian army. And the southern kingdom of Judah is who Isaiah is speaking to. And their national life at this point in history was marked by injustice, by the rich depriving the poor, by oppression and by idolatry. It's not a pretty picture. And so God's telling them through Isaiah that he's going to use this mighty nation of Assyria to bring judgment on his people for their wickedness. But interestingly, through Isaiah, he also speaks about Assyria, and he says that's not how Assyria will see it. They're not going to acknowledge that they are being used as God's instrument for justice. Instead, we see this. This is in Isaiah chapter 10. It's on page 695 if you want to follow it in the church Bibles. He quotes the mindset of the Assyrians as saying, "By the strength of my hand I've done this, and by my wisdom because I have understanding, I've removed the boundaries of the nations. I've plundered their treasures. Like a mighty one, I have subdued their kings. So God's using Assyria, but they think it's all because of their own strength. But in time, Assyria too is going to be judged. We're in about 720 BC, but the Assyrian Empire was destroyed just over 100 years later in about 610. And the Assyrian Empire has never returned, whereas the Jewish people are here to this day. And it's into this time of judgment and fear for God's people that God is speaking through Isaiah, and he's seeking to lift their eyes up to the one who's coming, the one that we know is Jesus. So in the following chapter, in Isaiah chapter 11, Isaiah says this, speaking about Jesus who is to come. The Spirit of the Lord will rest on him, the Spirit of wisdom and of understanding, the Spirit of counsel and of might, the Spirit of knowledge and fear of the Lord. And he will delight in the fear of the Lord. He will not judge by what he sees with his eyes, or decide by what he hears with his ears, but with righteousness he will judge the needy. With justice he will give decisions for the poor of the earth. How different that is from what the Assyrians saw as wisdom, or how God's people were living at the time. Yeah, Isaiah doesn't describe the wisdom of this one who's to come in terms of his power or by what he knows, but he's describing his character and what he does. So wisdom isn't so much about Jesus being all-knowing, but it's about who he is and what he does. Wisdom is living with God's character. It's starting to see the world as God sees it. It's acting with humility and with love. So wisdom, as God defines it, is all about who he is. It's the heart of God, what God's like. It's the way that he's ordered and created his world. And it's his whole purposes for the entire cosmos. Psalm 104 here says, "How many are your works, Lord? In wisdom you made them all. The earth is full of your creatures." So wisdom is about creativity. It's about God's whole plan. And so Jesus is promised as having that Spirit of wisdom resting on him. Well, let's turn to the New Testament and see how this plays out in Jesus' life and his death. The Apostle Paul writes of what that wisdom meant as we look at Jesus. This is in 1 Corinthians, if you want to turn to it. "The message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to those who are being saved, it is the power of God. Where are the wise? Where is the teacher of the law? Where is the philosopher of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? For since in the wisdom of God the world through its wisdom didn't know him, God was pleased through the foolishness of what was preached to save those who believed." Now, these verses seem like a bit of a riddle, and they bear reading several times to kind of get the hang of what Paul is trying to say here. But I think it's something a bit like this. He's saying, in all of our human ingenuity, we think we can work out how the world works. We think we can figure out what God might be like. We think we can understand what that good life looks like and how we might achieve it. But the truth is, that kind of thinking doesn't actually lead us to God. Yeah, because Jesus confounds all of our human expectations. He seems utterly foolish to our human way of thinking. He goes on. "Jews demand signs and Greeks look for wisdom, but we preach Christ crucified, a stumbling block to Jews." A stumbling block because Jews couldn't fathom out how God's promised long-awaited king, the person they'd read about in Isaiah and elsewhere, how could that king face the curse of a brutal execution at the hands of pagan oppressors, the Romans? It just didn't make sense to them. And it's foolishness to Gentiles, to people who aren't Jews, people like the Greeks and the Romans, because they saw a powerful conquering king. That would be who they'd want to follow. Someone much more like the Assyrians than like Jesus. But to those whom God has called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ, the power of God and the wisdom of God. The cross looks weak and powerless. It looks like the defeat of a promising leader. It doesn't look like the sort of king that you would want to follow. But here again is an act of God's wisdom. Here again is an act of creation, of recreation. This weakest of moments secures the greatest of victories. When Jesus died on the cross, justice was done. Going back to thinking about the problems of Judah, all of my wrongdoing, all of my injustice, all of my depriving of the poor, my oppression, idolatry is dealt with. All that's wrong in my life, all that's wrong in your life, all that's wrong in God's people of 700 BC, and all that's wrong in our modern world is dealt with at the cross. Justice is done not by exercising judgment on me, but by Jesus stepping in and taking my place. 6 weeks today, we'll be celebrating Jesus' resurrection on Easter Sunday, where even death itself is defeated. Death no longer has the final word because of this moment of apparent weakness. There's life, even better life than we have now, beyond the grave. So maybe all that raises questions for us about how God's wisdom could be transforming the apparent weakness that we see today in our own lives into something new, like he did at the cross and resurrection. Where is Jesus' wisdom creating something in my life? Yet, even where that looks different from my wisdom or my culture's wisdom, what are the situations that look weak or foolish? The places of defeat where Jesus, by his Spirit, is going to do something new and beautiful. Wisdom means seeing things as Jesus sees them. It means asking the Spirit of God to give us his eyes to see things, not as the world around us sees them. So how does that play out for us? Well, fast forwarding a little bit further in the story, James was the human brother of Jesus. He was the leader of the church in Jerusalem, and he's the writer of a letter in the New Testament towards the end of our Bibles. And he's writing to Christians after Jesus' death and resurrection and ascension back to heaven. Christians who've been scattered far and wide across the empire under persecution of those who follow Jesus. They're facing all sorts of trials and opposition, even though they've fled from Jerusalem. And he says this: "Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work, so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. If any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you." So James is speaking into these trials, and his counsel to the people he's writing to is to ask for wisdom. And again, this wisdom isn't knowledge. It's not a clever plan to help them avoid persecution, but it's character. It's the ability to endure, to trust. It's the ability to dare to see God's creative power even in the darkness of their situation. He goes on a little bit later to unpack this, and he says, "Who's wise and understanding among you? Let them show it by their good life, by deeds done in the humility that comes from wisdom. But the wisdom that comes down from heaven is first of all pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. Again, he's describing wisdom as character. That sounds awfully like the character that we see in Jesus. Yeah, when their logical reaction might have been to fight or to hide those that were oppressing them, James says, no, wisdom is pure, peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. And we now know that that persecution that they were undergoing was actually a catalyst for the explosive growth of the church, the spreading of the good news about Jesus. Luke, who wrote the book of Acts that catalogues the early church, tells us that those who'd been scattered preached the word wherever they went. And history tells of the expansion of God's kingdom and God's people through that time. Again, God's using unlikely circumstances in his wisdom to do something unimaginably creative. So what does all that mean for us? Well, it means Jesus doesn't just have wisdom. He doesn't just give wisdom. Jesus is wisdom. Jesus defines wisdom. He embodies wisdom. He is the final word on wisdom. Some of us might be familiar with words from the Apostle John, who says, God is love. And in a similar way, Jesus is wisdom. So biblical wisdom isn't about acquiring knowledge. It's not about gaining expertise, but it's about a relationship with a person, the person of Jesus. So when Solomon says, get wisdom, actually what that means for us is get Jesus. Come to Jesus and ask him to make us truly wise, to give us his character, to see the world as he sees it, to act with humility and love beyond our present circumstances. And no doubt in this room and in this church, there's going to be all sorts of different circumstances. Some that are known, some that aren't. But to all of us, Jesus is saying, get wisdom. And if any of you lacks wisdom, he says, and that's all of us, we should ask God who gives generously. So the question is, dare you, trust that in our darkest and most fearful days, they might be the very ones where God is going to do something unimaginably wise and wonderful and creative. What are we to do with all this? That's the question. Well, let's look at different ways in which this plays out. First, let's look at our world. Our world at the moment is in chaos. There are crises everywhere we look, as Rachel led us to pray for earlier. Yeah, people around us are realising that the things that they've put their trust in aren't as certain as they thought they were. And they're looking for wisdom for these times, in these unprecedented days. And this is the very time where God's wisdom takes the good news to new places, like it did in the first century church. God's wisdom takes the good news to new people, to people who were closed off but are now questioning the very assumptions that they've lived their lives by. Yeah, in these days, we need Jesus. We need wisdom for this hour. Our world needs wisdom. Yeah, we need to pray, as we looked at earlier, how many are your works, O Lord? In wisdom you made them all. Pray that in the faith that God is still creating in his wisdom, that he's creating new daughters and sons as the desperate times that the world is facing become the soil in which he brings new life through the Holy Spirit. Those of us who were at Power Hour a couple of weeks ago, the monthly prayer meeting, we're praying like this. We need to continue to pray that God will reveal in his wisdom to people that are in need of hope and purpose. But what about us, those maybe who are seeking to follow Jesus already? What does this wisdom look like for us? Well, as I said, some of us will be facing extreme trials. Some of us are struggling to cling on by our fingertips at the moment. Others maybe are in a period of joy and abundance, and lots of us will be somewhere in between those two extremes. Well, if you're in a period of chaos, get wisdom. This isn't a time to take our focus away from Jesus and to deal with our circumstances, tempting as that might be. This is a time when you especially need his wisdom to see the situation as he does. And if you're in a period of abundance, also get wisdom, because you'll need that wisdom now, but also in the difficult days that inevitably are ahead of you. So now is the time to put down deep roots into Jesus' wisdom. So we've already heard, and as Andrew helped us to start thinking about at the start of the service, this week's the start of Lent, and it's traditionally a time where people seek Jesus in those 6 or so weeks leading up to Easter. So it's an ideal time to get wisdom, to get Jesus. Yeah, so why not think about not just what you might give up for Lent, but what you might take up? Yeah, perhaps it is a time to read a Christian book. Perhaps it's a time to dig into the Bible. Why not read Proverbs or Ecclesiastes or Job or one of the Gospels? Why not set aside an additional time each day to pray? Why not join the lecture lunches on Thursdays? Why not try some of those Christian disciplines? Maybe fast for a day a week or a meal a week. Why not commit to meeting regularly over this time with a friend to pray together? And if you recognise your need to get more of Jesus, if you know that you need more of his wisdom, of course, we'd love to pray with you afterwards. But for all of us, in a few moments as I close, we're going to have a chance just to respond to Jesus' invitation to wisdom. And we're going to do that by listening to a song together. And the song speaks of how the darkest moments of Jesus' time on earth, the moments as he is killed and buried, that they become this unimaginably powerful and creative linchpin, not just of his life, but of all of history. The time where freedom and a perfect future is made available to us all. So as you listen to these words quietly, you might want in your heart just to be asking Jesus for more of himself, more of his wisdom. Others of you might just want to reflect on the words and use them to worship silently. So I'm going to close. I'm going to ask Hannah to get the video ready. But before that, let's just pray together. Jesus, thank you that you are wisdom. We're sorry that often we and our world seeks wisdom in ourselves, not in you. So for each of us here, for this community of Long Ashton, for our nation, for our world, we pray, give us wisdom in you, Jesus. Amen.